Hi, this is John Zafis from the Paranormal Research Center of New England. I hope you guys enjoy listening to Ghostly Talk. These guys are great. Have a lot of fun with them doing their show. And feel free to contact them if you ever need anything. And feel free to contact me if you ever need anything. Be willing to share experiences and talk about things. And like I said, listen to my buddies here at Ghostly Talk.
Hello, this is 911. What is your emergency?
Hello, 911. You've got to help me. There's a ghost in my trailer.
Excuse me, ma'am?
There's a ghost in my trailer. He's a flipping and a flopping and a flying all over.
Ma'am, please calm down. Ghosts do not haunt mobile homes.
Yes, they do. I saw them hard copy.
Okay, what is the ghost doing?
He turned the lights on and off, and then he knocked on the door.
Are you sure it's not the power company?
No, he's right here on the couch eating Cheetos.
Okay, what does the ghost look like?
He's invisible. I can only see the orange stuff around his fingers and his mouth.
Sound familiar? This scenario happens every day at trailer parks across America. Experts estimate that one out of every six mobile homes is haunted by a ghost or perhaps a possum. You could be next. Here are some telltale signs. A can of skull mysteriously floats through the air. Blood drips out of your simulated wood paneling. The room is spinning and you're not even drunk yet. If you think your trailer may have an unwanted guest, please call Trailer Exterminators. We specialize in mobile home ghost removal as well as the extermination of aliens, secret government bugs, and in-laws. Don't call 911. Call us now.
Trailer Exterminators, may I help you?
Yeah, the government has built a tiny robotic inchworm that has infiltrated my compound and attempted to steal my secret car's poison recipe.
Don't worry, sir. We'll be right over.
I'll be hurry, because they're about to unleash a giant bat.
Don't delay. Call now. Double Y's X.
At www.missourighost.net. You are listening to Ghostly Talk.
Trusting in the sanity and restraint of the United States is not an option.
Go home and die.
That chick is really hot.
The one in the bumper?
Who was singing, yeah.
Oh, man. You guys...
I bet you she's a diva beyond all divas.
Don't know. Don't know.
You can hear it, though, man. She was really pretty.
This is Ghostly Talk, and I'm Doug.
I'm Scott L.
I'm Will.
And we're back. This is, what, the second week of November?
Third week of November already.
Third Sunday of November.
Well, like next week, well, in a week and a half, it'll be Thanksgiving, won't it?
That's coming up this week.
No way.
Call up the calendar.
Where's the calendar?
I want to see this.
What day is Thanksgiving? Well, the date is like the 25th or something?
It's the 24th.
That's this week?
It's this week.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God.
Do you know what that means? That means tomorrow. Tomorrow would be the 21st of November. And isn't that the day that Eunice White visits Jacob Crouch?
Oh, 22nd, I thought.
Oh, 22nd.
That would be Tuesday.
Tuesday night.
We've made no plans at all. That day, too. I'm like thinking, maybe I'll shoot out there.
We are on the phone, though.
Yeah, sorry. We're thinking out loud here.
Yeah, we got a little sidetracked there by a local legend, Karen. There's a local legend here in Michigan about the infamous Crouch murders, where a family was murdered one night, and... the whole family, and then the daughter, who is buried at a different cemetery in Jackson, Michigan, she floats across or does whatever she has to do to go visit the gravesite of her father, Jacob Crouch. Mm. And evidently, some people have claimed to see the ghost come for this annual visit.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's
it's on our minds now. I don't know what we're gonna do. It's a little late.
Late to make plans.
I didn't
now,
even realize Thanksgiving's this week.
It is. It's this week.
I cannot believe
this
that. It creeped right up this year.
I can't believe that. I'm losing all track of time.
We are on the line though with Karen Herrick, and we've been the first half an hour here. We discussed a lot of shutting down. I mean, that's really what a lot of disassociation, shutting down.
The reasons people, they go through, I guess it's normal to be abnormal or normal to be dysfunctional.
How do you say that, Karen?
It's kind of confusing.
It is normal to be dysfunctional. Most families are dysfunctional on some level.
So we were talking about the dysfunctional and then the things that can happen out of that.
Okay,
and one of them was the story of the physical phenomena. I noticed immediately.
To disassociate because you have trauma in your childhood,
mm-hmm.
gives you the ability to disassociate as an adult, which mm-hmm. gives you the ability to have spiritual experiences.
Okay.
And it's interesting. Can I just comment on that ghost story? Because
yeah.
I really believe that ghosts are people. You know, they're just the spirit of a person.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But they're still people. So I do believe that woman could go across and visit her father. And, you know, it's interesting. At Easter time, they are always talking about Christ who, rises from the dead, and then he appears on the bank of that one lake, and he tells his friends in the boat where to cast their nets and go fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And I always think, I have neighbors who love to fish, and they would love that if their friend came back and said, just fish on that side, the fish.
Well,
I mean, how many guys wouldn't like that? You know, their friend to come back and tell them where to fish. And I often think about if Christians had been told that Jesus was a ghost who told his friends where to cast their net and fish,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't that make them more friendly to ghosts as they grew up?
Mm-hmm. Probably,
It's just the way the experience is treated by others that influences how we deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And if we had just been taught to be more friendly to ghosts, we would be more friendly now. You know, we would accept them more.
Well, yeah, the whole idea, it's an example. I don't know if this would apply to disassociation or not, but the story we always love to tell here on Ghostly Talk is as far as adults, like all of us talking right now on the phone, children young children, we've noticed, have some, from what we've seen, seem to have this sixth sense. We don't really know what it is.
Yes, they do. Mm-hmm.
I
have clients whose children see Grandpa who died,
mm-hmm.
And the other people don't see him.
Well, one thing I know that growing up, and I'm going to throw it out there again, is I know growing up I'd have the scary monster story or the ghost, the nightmare. The nightmares, the scary monster nightmares, or I think
right.
there was some horned beast with 15 eyes in my closet that was going to come and rip my heart out or something or whatever it was. I'd freak out and start screaming, and my mom or dad would run in there and grab me and say the immortal words, Scott, there's no such thing as ghosts. There's no such thing as monsters. You're in your own home and you're safe. There's nothing that's going to hurt you, which is a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Right.
I think it's great. They did a great job with that. But through that, they developed these filters that we talk about a lot. That now, where even to this day, even with the field of study that we're in, the show that we do here, I am still reluctant sometimes to acknowledge if somebody says, hey, I think I feel something. I'm going, dude, it's cold in here. It's drafty. Relax. Mm-hmm. I'm still not as open-minded as I'd like to be, and I catch myself sometimes doing that. I think it's a bit of disassociation also, where I kind of just I distance myself from that because I've been programmed a little bit in a way, I think, and a lot of us, I think, adults nowadays have been programmed in that manner because a lot of our parents did the same thing. I mean, they were all on the PTA, they all shared that stuff, right?
Right. Because a rush of cold air could be a ghost.
It could be. It could very well be. We don't know. It's all theory.
It could be that, or it could be a rush of cold air.
It could be a rush of cold air.
It could be one or the other.
Yeah.
But it does depend. I mean, there's a lot of factors.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's right.
But I think people at least need to consider all possibilities.
Right. That's right.
So.
And I don't know how many people, are aware of, what are the characteristics of, feeling a presence of a ghost.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you talk about beliefs.net on the Internet?
Beliefs.net?
relief.net. It's a wonderful source of, I guess, New Age spirituality. And they did in May, they did a poll. And in fact, that art of that Newsweek magazine in September 5th, mm-hmm. They did a poll with belief.net in one of the articles in there. And 97% of the respondents indicated that they've dreamed of dead people. And many people believe that they were real visits that had.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But they had a whole list of different qualities or characteristics that people had about feeling presences and hearing a voice and dreaming of people. Mm-hmm. But feeling a rush of cold air and something brushing, you know, them around the neck was one of the characteristics.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I totally believe that. I totally yes. believe it. As far as those statistics are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
I've had it. It's happened to me. I can openly right. say that. I think I just told that story a couple weeks ago again about
right.
my coworker who passed away, and then like
and
that night,
dream, yeah.
I saw him in my dreams. He was there saying goodbye to me. I can verify that just from my point of view. I think that's really important.
Right.
I want to talk about this if we can for a second, though. We were talking about your patient in the last.
Yes, whose father threw the knife at him, and he felt.
Yeah. Yeah.
He saw something like a sheet of plexiglass come down in front of him, but he was very clear to say it was not a sheet of plexiglass, and I assumed it was a force field of some kind.
Hmm.
The knife bounced off of it and it didn't hit him. And I told him, you know, that it was a spiritual experience. And then I also said to him later that, you know, we can't assume that that's going to happen again. So I don't want you to fight with your father in the kitchen when there's knives around.
Well, yeah.
And he said, you know,
much of a trampoline or like,
right.
You know,
right. It doesn't.
And he said he wouldn't do that again. So, but that's what I assumed it was.
Do you think it might have been like a guardian angel or maybe something in him? Because I've read theories that everybody has senses that we do not tap into because of conditioning, mm-hmm. and abilities that we do not tap into because of conditioning. Do you think maybe there could have been some kind of psychokinesis going on, or maybe it was an external thing to him, like a guardian angel or something? Or
I believe in angels, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. so do I, because I have to tell you, there was one time where something divine happened. It was some kind of divine timing. It had to have been, because there was no way that when we were out ghost hunting and we were going out to the west side of the state,
Five cars of us.
All traveling at, what, 65, 70 miles an hour?
No,
whatever.
It was our crew, so we were doing about 80, 90.
Well, yeah. But I was in the lead, so it was probably 65. I was in a little tiny escort.
That,
but
I have to say that somebody looked, was something,
something, somebody, somewhere, somehow, some way, not of this world, was
saved
watching out for us.
Saved our lives. And for the simple fact, and I tell whenever, because this is a fun story to tell. I'm not going to tell it again. But, let's just say that, well, somebody of lesser intelligence, let's just say.
I agree with that.
Suddenly decided to stop on a freeway. We've told this before on the air. Somebody decided to stop on the freeway. We're telling Karen, though, right now. So the rest of you listeners, phase out. We don't care. Somebody decided to stop on the freeway.
In front of me.
Right.
And she stopped on the expressway in order to, she thought that she could basically stop, back up, and turn into the authorized vehicle only thing to go the other way on the expressway. Mm.
Okay.
Now, what she didn't know is that there was behind her was the mighty Doug Semick.
Me.
And his death escort.
Right.
Behind Doug was the mighty Will and his big red death truck, okay, that he had at the time. And behind him was, it was myself, Big Pete, Bonnie Foster,
mm-hmm.
and Jeanette in her Tweety Bird yellow Ford whatever thing it was.
Ford Escape, yeah.
Behind our truck, behind the Escape, was, oh, God, no. Was it Kelly?
Kelly
it was Kelly and Wayne in her big, gigantic, gas-guzzling SUV.
Right.
So there was four cars.
Four cars,
Karen.
Okay.
And behind behind Kelly's SUV was a minivan, somebody we didn't know, right?
A gentleman with a newborn, right?
Yeah. And you got to remember, Karen, we were all convoying to an area. We were following each other to get to this area, right?
Right.
This lady decided to stop, and what she did is stop five cars behind her, let's just say rather quickly, okay?
Uh-huh.
Which sent us all out of control, basically, on the freeway. And the thing that will always haunt my memory from this thing, and you know what I'm talking about, Doug,
mm-hmm.
was I heard Bonnie scream. I grabbed Pete. I was screaming, right? And the last thing I remember was this giant car hauler. You know, you've seen the car haulers, Karen, these big trucks that carry
big
brand
trucks with other cars on it.
This thing came and just... He literally went on the shoulder. He drove over on the shoulder and went right around us, and I felt that truck buzz by my right ear because the window was open.
So not only were the four drivers behind her, five drivers, because there was also the guy with the newborn who was not part of us.
Yeah.
Five drivers behind her, for some reason, absolutely, totally alert and ready for that thing, but also the truck on the right, because some people had to veer... Right.
People went everywhere.
Left.
People went everywhere.
People were scattering everywhere. There was one minor damage. One minor damage to a taillight.
To a taillight, and that was it. And we were all fine. Well, we were all pretty freaked out, let's just say
I'm telling you, that does not happen.
No.
No, it doesn't.
It was something that... I mean,
I've been alone in a room with an end table and bumped my toe or knee into it, okay?
Yes.
Yeah.
There were six, seven, eight, however many drivers all involved in this, one taillight.
Well, logistically, it's ridiculous.
It doesn't... It's ridiculous. That doesn't happen that way naturally.
Now, as far as that situation is concerned, Karen, you know, I know what Doug's point was on that, is that, yeah, something... I mean, no sheets of plexiglass came down and protected our car from being bumped into. We were very much like in the line. I mean, I remember we were like inches from Will's truck.
Mm-hmm.
So we were behind Will's truck.
And
we
millimeters from the car hauler.
Yeah.
Literally.
I mean, I felt it buzz by. I felt the thing just like scream, the Doppler effect by my ear. I felt it, right? And at that, I mean, obviously, if that thing would have just kept going straight, it would have tore through all of our cars like pieces of paper. Guaranteed. With the amount of weight it had sitting on it, and the truck itself is huge, right? It would have killed us all.
Mm-hmm.
We would all have been dead. As simple as that, we would all have been dead.
Wonderful that all of you know, that you both know, that something happened there, that something spiritual helped you there.
We all
that
talk
that
about
was
it.
A spiritual experience. Yeah, we've all talked about it since, and yes. And something happened, and it was not. We couldn't humanly control the situation in such a split second.
No.
Right.
It had to be some other entity. It was not us.
Other force, right.
Right.
It happened. I mean, we're talking, I mean, it took us about maybe a good 5 minutes to explain that to you, but it happened in within seconds. We're talking seconds, the reaction time.
So I hear you.
And to this day I keep saying that the gentleman driving that big car hauler, if I saw him today, I'd probably give him the biggest bear hug you've ever seen in your life.
I'd buy him a breakfast or something, because I'm telling you, that was amazing driving on everybody's part.
Yeah, but something we all agreed after that situation, Karen, that
something beyond our notice happened there.
Totally.
And you see, one of the characteristics that I talk about in a spiritual experience is that you have difficulty adequately describing it, and it's usually unforgettable.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm hearing from you guys.
Right. Because we can only tell, we can tell you pretty much almost the sequence of events, right?
Right.
But we can't tell you all of the things, because it was so many things in just a split second or two.
Yeah.
That's right.
You can't possibly put it, you might be able to write a couple books about it, but you couldn't put it into words, you know.
Because you could write a book on what happened.
There are no words to explain it.
Right.
No, there isn't. I mean, the feeling, I remember getting out of that.
The physics of it do not add up.
No, they don't. They don't.
That's right.
Just getting out of the car after that situation, I remember.
I was shaking.
Oh, I was rattling like a baby rattle.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, forgive me for saying it, Bonnie was traumatized. She was literally traumatized. She was freaked out. I mean, she'll agree with me, too.
Lisa was absolutely flabbergasted and freaked
out. The whole crew, we were all just like, and we were basically, Karen, and this probably adds up to it also of what we're talking about here, is that we were all in disbelief. We didn't believe, okay, why are we still standing here?
Right.
That's what I said to myself after, because I felt that, like I said, after hearing that truck buzz by my ear, I said, why am I still here right now? What just happened to us here? Why are we still alive?
But Will slept through it, right?
Will slept.
Yeah. No, I was awake for that.
Oh, okay.
It definitely sounds like a spiritual experience.
I most certainly believe that.
It was something definitely, I mean, to this day, obviously, we, like you just said a minute ago, the details, we can't really explain what really happened to us, but we can tell you the whole thing, how it played out.
But I'm glad it didn't result in having to have any of us having to have one of what we're going to be talking about next, near-death experience? Because I know that's one of your hot topics, right, Karen?
Well, it's one of the things I'd like to explain because they're happening more and more, and Raymond Moody wrote the book in 1975 that coined that definition of a near-death experience, which he talked about people having detachment from their physical body, and they had this feeling of peace, contentment, and a feeling of unconditional love, and sometimes they pass through a dark tunnel, bringing them to seeing loved ones who have died. And then sometimes they have a review of one's entire life and profound lessons about life and universal laws. And then they're forced to return from this place.
Yeah.
And then they come back and they have experienced a great feeling of unconditional love there. And they don't have a fear of death anymore.
Yeah.
And they usually change their life in some way. Many times they have a different feeling about relationships and how they want their relationships to be. And they have a feeling that they now have a purpose in life, even if they don't know what that purpose is.
Well,
and they're not so materialistic.
Well, talk about coincidental, and I don't believe in coincidences anymore.
Neither do I.
But I wasn't supposed to be here today. I wasn't supposed to be on the show today because I was supposed to be somewhere else. But I had just returned from Cincinnati. And you mentioned Cincinnati earlier, so I know you're familiar with it. We were in Sharonville, just a little bit north of there, for a thing called Victory of Light. It's like a psychic fair kind of thing. And I spoke at great length with, and even purchased a painting by, a fellow who, the entire series of paintings that he does, and there's about 12 of them or so, they are imagery from a near-death experience that he had.
Isn't that wonderful?
And I just bought it. I bought a painting of his called The Tree of Life. And he had seen this tree that he has no idea how big it was. You know,
right.
He paints it as like a fairly large but normal looking tree. But it was, he says that the problem is I didn't have a perspective to get how big it was because it was evidently, you understood that it was huge when you were when he was dead. He understood that it was. It was just gigantic. I mean, bigger than you can imagine at the moment.
Yeah.
And but when he paints it, you know, he's got to put it in some kind of perspective. You know, so he deals with that as an artist. But I bought the Tree of Life painting and he described for us me and Bonnie. He described for us some of his experiences and how they relate to the paintings.
Yeah.
During his near death experience.
Isn't that interesting?
And I wasn't even supposed to be here. Now we're talking about it. About near-death experiences, yeah.
So that's called synchronicity. It's wonderful.
That is. Yeah. That sure is.
It's totally. And it's an amazing concept. I know we both agreed, myself and Doug, just from past experience, since we've been doing this show, that we don't believe in coincidences anymore. I think everything, even down to the finest thing of you waking up 5 minutes late for work, for example, or whatever, breaks down to this thing that everything happens for a reason. And everything has a purpose as far as the whole universe and environment's concerned. And that's
a wonderful spiritual concept. And if people lived by that, they wouldn't be so anxious.
Well, that's what I say. You know, and that really, I got to say, as far as synchronicity is concerned, because you guys know,
your synchronistic experience last year.
Karen,
right?
Well, we'll jam on this after the show. I'll send you some links to a document that I put together on a situation in my life that I'll send you. And I think you might find it very interesting. I don't want to get into that because we've talked about it way too much on here. But
well, synchronicity is a Jungian word. Carl Jung,
he's a
psychologist that isn't really talked about a lot in the United States, but he believed in synchronicity a lot, and meaningful coincidences are synchronistic, of course, is another way to say it. But he put that in his psychology. And so a synchronistic experience is another type of spiritual experience. So people should know that. I don't know if they do know that.
Mm-hmm.
But these near-death experiences, I believe that to experience death without actually dying and be able to to visit that realm of the dead and return and be able to communicate with the world of spirits with no help needed from a religious person. I think it's a wonderful thing. And that Raymond Moody wrote that book in 1975. Raymond Moody is a medical doctor, and he also has two PhDs. And he was teaching philosophy at the University of Virginia, and he taught a lot about Plato. And Plato had written down, I think, the first near-death experience, which happened to a Greek soldier by the name of U-R, mm-hmm. and he had been put for dead on this, you know, pile of bodies, because the Greeks were always, you know, having these city-state wars. Mm-hmm. And when somebody was passing by this pile of bodies, and he stuck his hand out and said, "Get me out of here, I'm not dead." So they pulled him out, and he talked about this experience that he had passing through the tunnel and seeing the white light and his loved ones. And then somebody told somebody who told Plato, and Plato wrote it down.
Mm-hmm.
And so Raymond was telling about it in his class, and the more he would tell this story, the more students would come up and say, "You know, Dr. Mooney, I have that. I had a car accident, and that happened to me. I went through a tunnel, and I saw the white light." And so he started writing down how many people actually have these experiences, and then his doctor friends started sending him people who had them, and
mm-hmm.
and then eventually he wrote this book, and he had studied about 100 people. And he tells the story of he wrote the book, and he wanted to say in the book, "Well, what do you guys think? Is anybody out there had one of these?" But of course, the publisher put "expert on near-death experiences," and it had to be something that was out there, because, you know, that the public was just waiting for. Because within 4 months, the book was an instant seller all around the world.
Mm-hmm. Well,
And now people are having them on the operating table in hospitals. 20% of the people that have heart attacks have a near-death experience on the operating table, or that are awakened in a hospital.
We do hear about that an awful lot, especially nowadays.
There's been specials even on TV.
Yeah.
That's right. So it's a normal thing almost to have a near-death experience. But I really think that it's helping people to identify their spirituality. And I think it's changing our spirituality in the United States. I was really disappointed to see that Newsweek didn't talk about near-death experiences in this article,
mm-hmm.
because it is a way that people are, you know, experiencing spirituality, but they didn't. Because I think it makes people more spiritual, because when they come back, they have a different idea of who they are.
Well, that's it right there. And we were talking about synchronicity a second ago, and
right.
a lot of people don't get the concept. I mean, I do. I really understand it. And what I want, it makes things a lot easier to deal with, I think, because when something bad happens, like, you know, if I stub my toe, or, you know, some, you know, it could be huge, you know, the death of a loved one or something like that.
Right.
It does make it easier to work with things like that and work through them to go, okay, look, man, you stubbed your toe for a reason, all right? This is the reason, and maybe you don't know. A lot of times you may never know. You may never know, but I've watched things.
But just to believe that there's something, you know.
After the episode I had, after my spiritual experience, let's just say I'll call it that, okay, because I think it mm-hmm. really was a spiritual experience, I watch things so closely now, Karen. I watch every little detail of my life. Some people refer to that as anal retentive. But I watch every detail. I pay attention to all these things, and I see these patterns that develop over time of things. And I can't even explain it, like any of this stuff. I can't even explain it. It has to do with me. It's a personal thing. I know that's exactly what we're talking about. Now, in regards to a near-death experience, I don't think there's anybody that would go through something like that and not come back if they saw the tunnel and they met their loved ones and they learned all this stuff and they were able to come back and they breathe it and they take that first breath again and they get the air going back through their system again and they start operating the physical bodies and they go, okay, what the hell just happened to me here? What the hell?
Right.
I don't know if there's anybody that's not going to say, something just happened to me for a reason. Same thing.
That's true.
Same thing.
But you're talking about a lot of spiritual concepts already. I mean, synchronicity and having the idea that things happen for a reason. I mean, this is all a lot of, you know, New Age beliefs, really.
Yeah.
And it's a way of life.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And it makes you think that you are here for a reason and that everything is happening to you for a reason. And if you do think like that, you do pay attention more.
Oh, absolutely.
You're looking for signs,
mm-hmm.
you know, like you drive along. And when I drive downtown, I ask my spiritual guides for a parking space. And, you know, people used to, you know, 10 years ago, my friends used to laugh. Well, they don't laugh anymore. They ask their spiritual guides for a parking space because you get a parking space faster when you do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
I needed that the other day, but it didn't happen.
Well, and that's the thing, right? I mean, that's my thing is it's called enlightenment. It's called awareness, I think. I know I can tell you firsthand, Karen, as far as my situation is concerned, the thing that happened to me, almost 2 years ago. It was last year.
Yeah.
It was a real wake-up call for me. And I mean, it's made me, I don't want to say hypersensitive, but I pay attention to a lot more things now. And every little thing that happens to me, I kind of assess it in the grand play of everything.
Well, that way you learn about yourself.
Well, yeah, man, totally.
You learn a lot more about yourself by noticing these things that are happening and how you react to them.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right.
And that's really important. I think a lot more people need to do that. And I mean, that's one thing I'm always telling people, like, what are you doing? What is your purpose? What are you doing, man?
But Karen, do you think it's happening more and more, not the near death, I mean, yeah, the near death experiences, you've already said that it's happening more and more, but also the people are coming around and seeing this kind of stuff and actually acknowledging, you know, the synchronicity, the something's got to be out there, you know.
Mentality, yeah.
Going on.
30 to 50% of people in the United States are having spiritual experiences. And 10 years ago, it was 30 to 40%. So in 10 years, it's gone up 10%.
Mm-hmm.
So people are having more spiritual experiences, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I think that's happening. And I think if you have something like belief.net on the Internet and people are hitting that every day for positive affirmations, and 25% of people in the United States believe in reincarnation, and 72% believe in angels, and 23% believe in astrology, and George Gallup Jr. is doing these polls constantly on spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very spiritual man, and he's always out there, you know, polling people. I think that's wonderful, and he's, over the years, has done a lot of different polls and questions on spirituality in America, and thanks to him, we have a lot of statistics where everything has gone up and gone up and gone up. And I really think that, like Raymond's book coming out in 1975, and now people are having near death, you know, more often and more often. I think that's showing us that spirituality is increasing, and we've had lots of articles in Newsweek in the last 10 years saying that church attendance is down, but spirituality is up.
Yeah, it's so, ironic, isn't it?
Yes. So people are looking for their own way somehow. And there was an article last year, I think it was Newsweek or Time, that said something about different types of religions were down. But they said something had this new type of person, and it was a spiritual person, went up from 8% to 15%, and these people believed in God and they believed in the Bible,
mm-hmm.
but they didn't believe in a specific religion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you believe in a specific religion and that works for you, that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely wonderful. However, if you don't and you just are looking for spirituality, that's wonderful too.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's, you know, that's...
Well, my question is it internal or external? Like, are people coming, happening along these kinds of things because of a natural psychological progression of the human race? Or is it perhaps like spirit guides and our loved ones and maybe any deities out there decided, okay, we're going to have a program. And we're going to send all these angels out. You know, I mean, is it external to people or is it internal? How does that work?
Well, I think it's both. Well, I'm a therapist, so but the people that come to me are doing it internally. But they're also, it's an internal thing, but then when I think about, like, widows, you know, there's a statistic that two-thirds of widows in the first year have a meaningful experience with their spouse,
mm-hmm.
their dead spouse.
Uh-huh.
Now, two-thirds. Now, but you don't hear about that.
No.
And these are little old ladies, right?
Widow could be anybody.
Well, it could be anybody.
Yes,
widow
can be anybody. Now, I also have had gentlemen come in who have lost their wives, and they're telling me that they're smelling perfume and they're having mm-hmm. the presence of their wife, their dead wife, you know, next to them at night. But, you know, men have a hard time with this. And they're asking me, am I crazy? And I'm saying, no. No, you're not. Your dead wife is next to you at night. Why wouldn't she be? She loved you very much.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows that you're in grief, and she knows that you love her very much. And there's nothing wrong with that. She's there with you. Well, my daughter says I'm nuts. Well, don't tell your daughter.
Yeah.
No, don't talk to her about this right now. Because she's saying get over it. She doesn't want to, you know, you to be sad. But, you know, you need somebody to talk to about this, and I'll be glad to talk to you. Or, you know, we can get you in a group of people that believe in spiritual experiences so that you can talk about it. But men have a harder time. So I'm sure it's happening to men, too. But women have a hard time, but women will talk about it.
Well, I wonder I'm just curious because this is just brain candy for me. Why do men have a harder time talking about this stuff as opposed to women? I know there's the common
motif.
Because men
have a harder time being vulnerable, you know, all around, just talking about their feelings and things happening to them. But men have a harder time also maybe thinking that they're crazy and admitting that.
Men,
that would hurt pride.
Well, yeah. I guess I already knew the answer to that question. I just need some verification because, you know, men are, by nature, They are the harder core than a woman is. Women are more emotional.
Right, they're territorial and
yeah. We pee on stuff to make sure it's ours.
No, we don't do that.
I'm kidding.
Well, I haven't done that in months.
But no, it seems that men. I agree. I mean,
I see that, but I also see it may be changing a bit.
Well, it is changing.
It may be changing a bit, but then it also comes back to my PhD stuff where they're afraid that they're hallucinating. And the difference between a hallucination and a spiritual experience is that a hallucination has no basis in fact. And a spiritual experience is an individual experience that gives an answer to the person having it.
Mm-hmm.
And a spiritual experience, when a person tells you, that person has a good ego and they can tell you the same story over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And their story doesn't change significantly. Mm-hmm. With someone's hallucinating, their story changes, you know.
Well, hallucinating is just seeing. I mean, hey, man, my parents grew up in the '60s. I saw some of the record albums they have. You know, I mean, where did you see that?
are we schizotypal?
What do you mean?
Well, there's this new phrase they came out with just a year or two ago.
A couple years ago.
To describe people who think they see ghosts and believe in these kinds of new age kinds of things, and they say that we're not schizophrenic, which is very nice of them.
Yeah, thank you.
But a weak related cousin to schizophrenia is schizotypal.
Right. I'm just starting to look this up because I don't have that embedded in my memory.
Oh, it's brand new. Well,
it's a newer concept. Yeah, but I know that in this world, we have to classify everything so we can put it in a database and then organize it and all that fun stuff.
Gave us a label.
Yeah. I love stats, too. I think stats are really great, but they've done it to people that study this sort of stuff, that study, you know, spiritual experiences and or ghost-related things or whatever you want to call it, as far as paranormal goes. They call it schizotypal. I think that's how you pronounce
well,
it.
It's on page 701 of the Diagnostic Manual.
Yeah.
Ideas of reference, excluding delusions of reference, odd beliefs or magical thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Unusual perceptual experiences, including bodily illusions, odd thinking and speech, suspiciousness or paranoid ideation.
Oh, that's me. They got me. Okay, they win.
Inappropriate or constricted affect. You guys don't have that at all.
What? Okay.
Behavior or appearance that is odd, eccentric, or peculiar. You don't have that. Lack of close friends or confidence other than first-degree relatives. So you have to be somebody that's afraid to leave their apartment.
That's me. I hate leaving this place. I like staying here.
Excessive social anxiety that does not diminish with being familiar and tends to be associated with paranoid fear. So you're pretty afraid to have social situations.
Okay.
If you're schizotypal.
I have a girlfriend. Does that count?
You're not afraid, though.
Okay, cool.
That's jumping in the water with both legs.
Then they're wrong. They're wrong.
So we're no longer schizotypal.
I don't think.
No, you're not.
Thank goodness, because I was really worried about that before the show today. I was like, Doug, what are we going to do, man? We're schizotypal. How are we? How do we go on living
anymore?
How
do we keep going on?
Yeah, exactly.
That's why you guys had me on.
Yeah, see, there's the reason. Everything happens for a reason, Karen. The reason we had on was to verify that we're not nuts. Guess that's what
well,
they
not totally nuts,
not totally.
Anyway.
Well, yeah, we're a distant cousin of nuts. I don't know what you want to call it, man. No, but it's a good question, though, Doug, that you asked, Karen, there. I mean...
Well, they had come out, and in the media, you know, in the news releases, they said, you know, well, this is for, you know, people who see ghosts and all that kind of thing. And I thought, well, I saw one once, you know, and I go...
That's why it's important that we train therapists to know the difference between mental illness and spiritual experience. It really is. Because people who have lost relatives feel very good when they see their... Mm-hmm. You know, they're dead relatives. They feel very close to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I ask very often, even people who tell me ghost stories on the show, and you can go through the archives, and when I hear one, and I'll say, was that comforting or was that unnerving?
Mm-hmm.
That's
yes.
One of the questions that I ask, and I ask it of almost every ghost story, but usually when it deals with relatives.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say a good 98% in that range, if it's not exactly 98, forgive me, plus or minus 5 points, okay, is in the realm of comforting.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, and that's...
Yes. I found that too. And if it's a negative experience, then, you know, I talk to the person about what that meant to them. And it usually has to do with their shadow material or unconscious material, something that they need to work through. And we do usually work through it. So we always use it to their benefit.
Well, and the big thing you just said that really grabbed me, Karen, is that therapists nowadays need to understand the difference between a spiritual experience and mental illness.
Yes.
I happen to believe, and this is just my opinion, so it don't go very far, but I think a lot, I mean, in our line of business here, if we want to call it business, what we do here on this show, we've talked to some people that I know, if I put them in a circle of regular, you know, regular job going to people that just kind of go to work, come home, and they told a story to these same people, they'd have them committed 5 seconds flat. They'd have them committed. You're crazy. You're absolutely nuts.
Right.
I really think a lot of people that are locked up nowadays, that are put away and drugged up or whatever they do to them, a lot of these people just maybe they can't control it. I've come in personal contact with, I mean, our friend Stacy, for example, she uh-huh. told me the story of when she started to hear voices and started to see voices, which, you know, I guess that would be a trait characteristic of schizophrenia, where you hear voices and stuff like that. She told me that she's like, I started hearing these voices and they were telling me things, and I had no control over it. It was very difficult at first for me to really deal with this, to the point where I was kicking and screaming in my bed at nighttime. She's like, it was a really scary thing, but once I gained control over it, and I understood what they were telling me and learned how to just kind of, you know, just work with it every day and deal with it every day. She calls them spirit guides. She has
right.
an open channel. What my point is that she is a person that, you know, she may be hypersensitive, more sensitive than myself or Doug or Will here, or maybe even yourself.
Yes.
And she has to deal with this every day. Now, I didn't grab her and drag her into the first laboratory I found and had the white coach take her in there, stick a needle in her arm, put her in a white room to bounce around like a basketball in for a couple hours. No,
right.
I said, wow, let's listen to what you have to say here. This is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I personally
she could be diagnosed bipolar. And lots of people that are bipolar
okay.
are very sensitive, and they learn to work with the voices that they hear,
mm-hmm.
and they do become very much spiritual,
mm-hmm.
and they work with other people and become very good helping professionals later on.
Yeah, I mean,
she is a very good person.
She
believes that her purpose here is to help. People.
Yeah.
Help all of
right.
humanity, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
She's trying to say that, hey, you know, we're people, there's more than just what you see, you
mm-hmm.
know. There's a side of you that is connected to everything in the universe. And it's stuff that I've heard before, and some things I heard from her first, but,
mm-hmm.
and have heard
since then, yeah.
from other people, you know, third-party affirmation or whatever.
Yeah.
but it, you know, so I she's not nuts.
No, I really wouldn't consider that. My point being, though, Karen, is do you think that that is the problem? And obviously, from what you just said, I think we're on the same railroad track, so to say, here.
Yes, it is a problem. Now, we have a V code in the diagnostic manual that's called Religious and Spiritual Experience, and it was put in 1994.
Wow.
And it was put in because of the statistics that 30 to 40% of the population had spiritual experiences, and the two spiritual experiences that got those statistics was mystical experience and near-death experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Now, V codes are not paid for by insurance companies. They're called a normal developmental phase.
Mm-hmm.
However, you could use a V code with a diagnosis that would be paid for by an insurance company.
Okay.
However, when they put this in, they watered it down so much. It's only 1 inch in size, and really, a lot of therapists don't know that there's even a V code that's called religious and spiritual experience, and they really don't know that there are statistics of 30 to now 50% of the population having these experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really therapists are not really educated enough about spiritual experiences, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to get my PhD in this field was to be able to do some teaching and training because we do need more therapists who know about this.
Well, yeah.
Because there are a lot of people that are diagnosed incorrectly and who aren't helped.
Well, yeah, I mean, just to open their minds up a little bit more, I think.
Well, that's true, and psychology is biased. Now, the two psychologies that really are helpful and would be helpful to your friend are transpersonal psychology and Jungian psychology, because they allow for altered states of consciousness, and our culture only allows for the waking state.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to know and understand about other states of consciousness that other cultures agree. You know, we need to know about dream states and, different states of consciousness where other things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that you can see ghosts and these kinds of things.
And that's just the thing, is like I said, it seems like there's a lot of people out there, a lot of very bright people, a lot of smart people, I think, that have been institutionalized.
Oh, absolutely.
Unfortunately. That have
and we have I was at a training session at a conference in New York in May, and Dr. Lukoff was speaking, David Lukoff, and he's from California.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a psychotic break when he was a young man, and he was not hospitalized. He was lucky enough to be able to go to friends' houses and write. And he wrote a book that was going to save the world, he said. And he told about his experience, and I think it lasted for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, as I said, lucky enough to just be able to work it off, talk it off. But thank heavens, now he's a psychologist. But he can help other people so much better because he had that psychotic break.
Uh-huh. Well, he's been through it. He's been through
it. And yes, he got through it, and he helps other people now. And he has a great website that other therapists can go on and they can really learn. But he's a transpersonal therapist. He uses transpersonal psychology.
And that's what you do, too.
Yes, uh-huh.
Exactly. That's the exact same thing. That's
mm-hmm.
That really just, like I said, that's one thing that's always been, it's been bugging me for a long time, Karen, and it touched a nerve because I think there's just too many people out there that are just misdiagnosed. I think it's a big problem.
Well, that's true, but there are other therapists, there's lots of therapists that do know about it, so, you know, we are out there, and I think that, I don't know why our world is, has this duality, this black and white duality, and it's all over in our country, that you have to find some therapists that don't help you before you find therapists that do help you. And that goes for lawyers and accountants and, you know, it just seems to be the way that we do learn in life.
And that drives me insane because there is this black and white issue.
But it happens in a lot of things, like you were saying, Karen, because... Well, they even say if you go to a doctor and then they tell you something you don't want to hear.
Get a second opinion. That's ridiculous. I've never done that.
Right.
First of all, I don't have the time for it. Second of all, okay, look, I have a really good doctor, I think. I have a young, good doctor.
Well, you have to have a trust relationship with your healthcare professional and your mental health professional.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to have a good relationship with them and you have to trust them.
And I've had him for 5 years, and everything I came there for, he's checked me out,
right?
Did whatever he had to do, and said, "Okay, Scott, You are the proud owner of Strep Throat. Congratulations.
Well, right? Something like that.
But I'm
yeah.
saying, I'm, this is for 5 years he's been doing this.
But if you had a green lump on your neck,
I'm going to come to him and go, hey, man.
I have a green lump on my neck.
I have a green lump on my neck. What is this thing? He's going to go, okay, Scott, that's a green lump on your neck. That's cancer. Congratulations. I'm going to go, okay, I have cancer. I mean, I trust that you've seen pictures in school of what cancer looks like.
Right.
Therefore, you're going to know what cancer is. I'm not going to go, you're full of it. This green lump on my neck is not cancer. I'm going to get a second opinion.
But I know people who have gone for second opinions, and that's because you...
That's denial. That's straight-up denial, in my opinion.
I don't know.
Unless your doctor's crazy. I mean, if he, like, walks in with, like, his little gimpy assistant or something like that, and there's lightning outside or something. I don't know what to tell you about that. I mean, Karen, what do you think about that? I mean, there is this black and white thing, like you said, Karen. There's this...
Well, it is. It just is the way our world works. I don't know why, but... you know, when people go to the other side, they say it's all love. There's only one thing on the other side. But here we have duality. Mm. Can we talk about pre-digression?
Yeah.
Sure, yes.
Yes.
Now, this is a word from Raymond Moody from his book, I think it's The Last Laugh. But I love this word, and I found it when I was studying him. And I think it's what the paranormal teaches us. Mm. Now, or the purpose for the paranormal. And... I asked Raymond what this word meant, and he tried to explain it to me, so I had to figure it out for myself because I really didn't understand his meaning. But he talked about the paranormal has a suspenseful allure. I'm going to give you his definition here.
Okay.
And it has a drama of a reciprocal alternate meanings, and it's associated in everyday language with mental illness, and it depends on prior ordinary concept of knowledge. So I had all that in my head, and I'm thinking, well, what does all that mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm thinking.
And then one day a client came in, and she was after Christmas, and she told me that she had been depressed that week, and she decided to meditate. In fact, she almost felt like she was pushed in the chair to meditate. And so she was meditating, and in her meditation she saw the three kings. And the three kings were coming toward her, and they bowed to her, and she stated she had this phenomenal feeling of having the three kings in front of her, and she was all of a sudden filled with all this energy, and she felt that they, the three kings, had come to tell her that she was worthy of all this esteem, and they were bowing to the divine inside of her. So before meditating, she had felt particularly depressed and was in this really black period.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I'm thinking about this, and all of a sudden I'm thinking about pre-digression, and I'm going, oh my God, this is what he was talking about, this allure and this meaning of this prior knowledge, and she, mental illness, she had been depressed, and all of a sudden she gets this image of the three kings, and it's a paranormal experience because, I mean, how many people sit down and meditate and the three kings are sitting there in their living room, you know, and she's Christian, so it's very meaningful to her.
Mm-hmm.
And this new truth came to her that she was worthy of esteem all of a sudden, more worthy than she had felt before. So this is pre-digression, and this is what Raymond says is the purpose of the paranormal, that it pre-digresses, what a word, it brings us new knowledge out of old knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what paranormal experiences do. And he says that the paranormal is just stories that people tell. And they really are. Anytime you hear paranormal experiences, people are just telling you stories.
A lot of times, that's what usually
happens. I mean, really, you know?
You're
but
right.
But he says that really, and a lot of them can really help people that are mentally ill. And I don't know how many therapists, you know, really use that, but I love to use it. And I love it when they bring me these kinds of things. And I like to use dreams and, you know, have them use any kind of images that they get in their dreams. So, and I love, you know, if they have a visit from, you know, Aunt Nora or whoever it is, or, mm-hmm. you know, their dead husband or anything. In fact, I ask them to, you know, like pray to their ancestors or, you know, pray to your mother and ask her for help with this problem. So I try to get them to see what, you know, somebody who has passed over has to say.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, lots of times these people helped them when they were here, so why wouldn't they help them now that they're dead?
Exactly.
I mean, For instance, you know, in Africa, they pray to their ancestors for help.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a client who was very negative, and I had, for this PhD, I went to an exorcist priest, and I was interviewing him. And I was talking to him about how I thought that negativity was one of the first stages of evil. And because I said I had some clients who just went negative so quickly. And I believe in, you know, positive affirmations and being as positive as you can be. And I asked him what he thought about that. Did he think that negativity was evil? And he said, yeah, that was kind of a good thought, you know. And he was asking me about this client. And I said, well, she goes negative real fast. And I said she really didn't have any spirituality in her life before. You know, she wasn't raised in a spiritual household. So
mm-hmm.
he said, well, he said, did I ever pray with my clients? I said, you know, in the room. I said, well, no, I pray for my clients, but I've never actually prayed with them in the room. But I said I would if it was all right with them.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, well, he wanted me to pray with her. He said he was Catholic, and he said the Holy Spirit can go backwards as well as forward. And would I pray, if it's all right with her, to pray and ask for any positive ancestor that she has to come and help her with this depression or this negativity? So I asked her, and so we prayed, and then she was to go home and pray every day in between sessions. And and I'm telling you, this depression lifted, and the negativity went away. And it was the ancestor prayers. So then I happened about a month later to see the Steven Spielberg film, The Amistad. Have you seen that?
Which film is that?
The Amistad, A-M-I-S-T-A-D.
No.
I did not see it.
Okay, now, I don't know where it's a true story,
mm-hmm.
and it happened in the 1830s, and it was a slave trade ship, and the black people, they killed all the white people. There weren't that many, but that were taking them away, except for two, and they told the two white guys to take them back to Africa, and of course they didn't. They took them to Long Island, and they got the ship into Long Island Sound, and they took them off, and they took all. I think there were 43 blacks, and they took them to Connecticut,
mm-hmm.
and they have this trial. And this little lawyer guy, he gets them freed. Well, Martin Van Buren is president, and he says, "Oh no, we can't have 43 blacks go free. We'll have a war between the states." So he declares a mistrial, and they have another trial, and they win. And he says, "Oh no, they can't win. It's got to go to the Supreme Court." So it goes to the Supreme Court, and John Quincy Adams is retired, and they ask him to take it to the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great movie. And he takes it to the Supreme Court, and the black guy that's in charge of them, his name is Kinsey.
Kinsey.
And Kinsey is from Africa, and he says to John Quincy Adams, because he's been in jail so long he can speak English by this time, a little bit, and he says he's not worried about going to the Supreme Court because he says in his country he prays to his ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you know, they help me because I'm all they have. Now, I'm watching this movie, and I'm thinking about the exorcist priest, right, who told me to pray to the ancestors. And I'm thinking, well, no wonder they helped her, because she's all they have, right? And then John Quincy Adams in the movie has this little breakthrough, because he thinks when he's at the Supreme Court, he sees this bust of his father. It's a really great movie. You have to see it.
I'll have to definitely check that out.
And so he talks to John Adams, kind of, at the Supreme Court. Of course, the Supreme Court doesn't realize what he's doing. But he says, we all come from, it's like a dysfunctional family. We are what we were. And Kinsey says that his ancestors will help him. And he makes this very moving speech about how we have to set them free. And if there is going to be a war between the states, let it come. And, but anyway, praying to the ancestors is something that I have taught my clients to do.
Hmm.
And I've also told them that the Holy Spirit will go backwards. And you don't have to know your ancestors, because a lot of my people, they don't have positive parents, right? Because a lot of their parents didn't help them.
Yeah.
So I always tell them, it doesn't matter who your ancestors were. You don't even have to know them. You know,
it's an amazing concept.
Sort of,
when you
think
about
isn't
it?
It?
Yeah. Literally, we live on through our children.
Yeah.
Because, you know, our children and their children and their children and their, you know, that's quite a a literal, like, lineage there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely fascinating.
And I know I've had personal experience with that, too. I've spoke to my ancestors myself, uh-huh. so I know I can identify completely with what you're talking about. Unfortunately,
it's a positive way to use ghosts.
Yeah, yeah, it's a very positive way. Unfortunately, Karen, man, every show, we're going to have to go to like 12 hours
or
something.
We're going to have 12-hour shows next time.
Yeah, because yeah. we could go for days, I think, on this camera.
But we're right up against right the up top again. Of the hour.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Karen, we got to thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
This is some amazing stuff we discussed tonight, really eye-opening. And, you know, I love having people on the show because sometimes you not only can learn from them, but you can verify some suspicions you may have had about things. And I think I've done a lot of that with you tonight, Karen. I thank you for that. I really appreciate it.
And I do too, Karen. It's absolutely enlightening and a pleasure to talk to you.
Absolutely. Karen, stay on the line. We're going to close the show out, okay? You just stay on the line, though, if you don't mind. Guys, this is the end of the show again. Oh, my God.
I know. Yet another Sunday. Come and gone.
Just gone. And it's going to be Thanksgiving this week. So
yes.
By this time next week, we're going to be done. Like, we're all fat and happy going, oh, I watched football and ate food. And we're going to still be recovering from that.
But I have a lot to be thankful for.
We do.
I'm going to.
Whatever your beliefs are about Thanksgiving, I mean, it is Thanksgiving and. It's that time of year where we go, hey, thanks for my brand new shiny USUV. I really appreciate it. I'm thankful for my family and stuff myself.
Yeah.
But, you know.
But I have to say, speaking of thanks to all the listeners who listen to Ghostly Talk and pass it around. Thank you to our guests and the people who call in.
Karen, Sarah, and Alex.
Yep, and thank you to the folks in the chat rooms.
Thank you to OmniSound.
And OmniSound and Pioneer.
Pioneer, all the crews out there replaying the show or doing or repeating it or burning it and pirating it everywhere. Thank you. We appreciate
that's
that.
That's what we want.
We'd like you to do that. We're the only
content.
People that will tell you that.
Open content license.
Open content.
Thank you, everybody. And until next week, have a great, great Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And give everybody at your family a hug. Okay?
I'm going to give Doug a hug right now.
And we're going to hug after the show.
Yeah, we're all going to hug.
So. I'm in the middle, no.
Yeah, make a Will sandwich.
So until next week, this has been Ghostly Talk, and I'm Doug.
I'm Scott L.
I'm Will.
Have a great Thanksgiving.
We're out, y'all.
I need to go someplace where a man can think. Listen to now.
I need to go someplace where a man can